What's up, man?
Dude, I want to tell you about something I've enjoyed this week, because this has been an awful week.
Yes, I want to hear it.
I started playing Cyberpunk 2077.
Okay.
When it first came out, it was like a huge joke on the internet, and it was like, this is the worst game ever.
It was bad.
Yeah, it was so bad. They had fixed a lot of things, and I saw a few clips of it recently. And I was like, I'm kind of interested to try that. I've been having a blast, dude. I've put in like 9 hours, dude, over the past few days. I am having so much fun.
What's the name of the Night City?
Night City,
What's the Phantom Liberty?
Phantom Pack. I don't know if I have that or not.
You have to like go to a specific entrance and stuff to like go there. Because I bought it and I was like, I have no idea how I even start this. I thought that story was really good. That one, they did a really good job on. The main game's fun too. It's a darn good game and there's a lot to it.
Yeah, I'm having a lot of fun. I had to let go of a part of myself though this week, and I need you to like feel empathy for me when I say this, that I've always envisioned myself as this stealthy like sniper type of person, and I've always tried to play that type of like character. I came to the realization this week that I'm not that type of character. I never play like that. And I'm not like that as a person. I am like an intrusive, boom, in your face type of person. And that's the same way I play video games. So I had to abandon that idea of myself this week as the cool sniper.
That's understandable. Yeah. That's like playing Hitman or something. And you want to be super silent and whatever. And then you're just, well, I accidentally bumped into this person. Now they're shooting at me. Might as well kill them all.
Yeah, whatever. I just need to rock the assault rifle and just let it run. And dude, I've just been rocking that and I've been having a blast.
I like that game a lot because there's a lot of different styles you can play.
Yeah.
If you have not played the Phantom Liberty stuff yet in there, it's real good.
I'll have to try it out. I think I'm right in the beginning of Act 2 right now.
Yeah, I don't remember. I played through the whole story a couple times.
A couple? See, I'm still trying to find the girl that you can get in the second act. I still haven't gotten there yet.
Well, because there's a little bit of difference with the, what do they call them? Like the factions or whatever?
Yeah,
like,
The corpo. I'm a street kid.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That right? Yeah, dude, I gave up on like my ideas of myself and just let my actual stuff play out in this. Yeah, I'm the street kid. Yeah. I'm doing crazy stuff in the street.
That game's really good. And it's one where it's redeemed itself. Because I guess it came out December 2020 and everybody was like, yeah, it's terrible. Every single review of the new graphics cards, everything is cyberpunk, testing against it. People are still playing a ton of it. I don't know if they'll do any more DLCs, but if they do, I'll pick it up.
They released a 2.2 something like recently within the past few weeks.
Yeah.
So
it's cool to see that because they're probably going after the sort of impossible achievement that Grand Theft Auto 5 has done, which is like, it's still incredibly
the
popular.
Game of my childhood and adulthood, dude.
Yeah, it's insane because GTA 5 came out so long ago.
We played GTA 5 in high school. That's what we grew up on. And we still play GTA 5 sometimes to this day.
It was released September 2013.
I was a sophomore or junior in high school.
That is insane to me.
Oh, yeah. Dude, we were rocking that back in the day.
That is crazy. I remember like 4 and stuff coming out. It doesn't feel like it's been 12 years.
I remember Minecraft when you only had 6 block options in like a limited world.
Have you played Balatro?
Yes, I have played Balatro.
Yeah.
And it's given me bad ideas, dude, because right now, there are more than 27 casinos within like a 20-minute drive from me. So it's given me awful ideas. But yes, I am playing Balatro.
Dude, it's so good. If anybody doesn't know, it's like a poker game.
Yes.
But a deck builder and has a bunch of roguelike characteristics. So every play is different. Playthrough is different.
You can play like multipliers on certain flushes.
It's so good. At the beginning, I was like, this is kind of dumb. Why am I just sitting here playing
right
by myself? But then you start to unlock these cards that do weird things. You can destroy cards in your hand, which doesn't sound like a good thing, but you destroy all the low cards. And then the only cards you're going to draw we'll get you face cards or whatever. And so then
it's like a point scoring type thing. Yeah, like I should mention, like you're getting points based on the cards you play.
Yeah, like if you play a pair, then you get 10 points and it's multiplied by 5 to get your score. And you have to like get a score of 600 or 1,000 or whatever. And it gets up to insane numbers. I still haven't gotten past ante 11, but you have to do like multi-million points to beat every round.
I haven't gotten to the millions yet.
It's crazy. But then you get the multipliers and some of them will add multipliers, but then you get a few of the cards that will multiply the multipliers.
Yep.
And then you do other jokers that will multiply those other jokers and it just gets nuts sometimes.
But you know what the real problem about all of this is? Is that we're going to be in Vegas a month or two.
Yeah.
Well, here's the real question. How many people do you think are going to Vegas having not played Bellagio and being like, I can play poker now. Let's let it run.
Yeah. You're like, where's the jokers at?
Yeah, where are the jokers at? I'm not winning any multipliers on this.
Yeah. Dude, what's inspiring about that game is it was made by one dude who was just making games for fun on the side and then happened to give this game in it real early days to his friend who was like, yeah, I'm still playing that. And he's like, what are you talking about? That's weird.
Yeah.
I think he did all the art and pretty much everything.
And the art's not cool. If you went through like the computer science curriculum in the United States, you probably built a card game at some point.
Yeah, this is one of the coolest games.
It's popular as hell.
Especially, yeah. Something I read recently was he sold 15 million copies so far. And he's making...
Heck yeah, dude.
I think the price on Steam or whatever is like $15. So, oh, what is that? 15 million.
Dude, this is like the new Flappy Birds developer.
Yeah,
but no like kidding. He actually like stuck around for the payday.
Yeah, and he's in the process of just making version 1.1 or whatever, a big update to it. Adding new stuff, new jokers, whatever, fixing bugs.
Yeah, dude, because you wouldn't easily think of like licensing actual casinos, actually put money into this. Dude, I would totally go to a casino and put real money and play Bellagio.
It's just insane. It's really cool to see the success of that. I imagine it's not easy for him, or maybe his publisher or whatever helps out with that. It's on the Switch, PS5, Android, macOS, Steam. Yeah,
like how do you scale everything. That?
That's a lot of stuff. And maybe it's easier because using Unity or whatever these days, Unreal Engine or whatever compiles against all those. There's still so many nuances. We can't even get browsers to be.
I know. Yeah, I know. Dude, you did a lot this week. Before we get into that, I have a follow-up from last week. Let me check my arm. I tried
Let me check my arm.
Yeah, I'm like the memento guy right now. I've got like Sharpie written all over my arm.
Just woke up, aren't sure how you got here today.
I have multiple shots into my mouth directly today, so please forgive me as I drool out of like half of my mouth.
You're like Kramer in that Seinfeld episode, drooling.
I showed up, bro. Like I was prepared to show up with half a numb tongue. We're getting this done today. I tried Veet this week with my project partner, Diego. Shout out, Diego. And we time boxed it because I was, dude, we have stuff to do with our lives. We both want to like get ES Build upgraded, but we don't have the space or time to get this done. So we time boxed it for an hour. We did not get it fully working in that hour. And so we saved it to a branch. However, we were both very encouraged by that process of this is something we think could work. We have a lot of interesting things going on, but as we like dove more into the docs, we were like, oh, well, it has hot module relay for stimulus controllers and for React, and it has all this minification stuff built in, and it has this and that. And I've long since thought we could be better minifying our assets, but I thought that on every app I've ever worked on.
Probably true for all of them,
like, there's a better way to package this, and like I think Cloudflare did a really good job of being at the end. They were like, we'll do it for you. And I think that solved a lot of it, but I've always thought there's got to be a better way to do this.
Yeah, because you would think it could just be a step you add after pre-compiler as part of that process.
Right.
Just even going through and like minimizing your SVGs.
Yes. Lots of Exactly. Like we do some of that stuff manually. For instance, we still use SAS. So I'm of the opinion of just use SAS to compile SAS because you're going to get the best SAS with SAS. So I don't think I'd be interested in switching over to like a loader like you would do with the Webpack or like PostCSS for SAS specifically.
Stuff also ties you more into the tool, so it's harder to migrate.
Exactly. So for
and if you're just using the SAS CLI, then you're like, mm-hmm. well, cool. Yeah. I just pump the output into something else and we're
exactly.
done.
Exactly. So we left that alone and we were working on the JavaScript and we got some of it working, just not completely. And when we hit our hour and we were like, stop, hammer time. We're done here.
It's good that you did that though, because it's always tempting to go another hour and then you end up
in the
8 hours down the road and you're like, well, I got 75% of it done, but the last 25% is going to be a real pain.
Oh yeah.
But now I'm so close that I should do that.
And that type of stuff will become like a thorn in my brain. We were both like, all right, our powers combined. We will stop at an hour. We just want to see how this will go. Is it more worth it to try this than to try upgrading our ES build? Mm-hmm. And we're like, okay, we're going to try upgrading ES build again, but we are both encouraged by this and want to keep playing with this. And that's kind of where we're at with that.
No, that's awesome. Yeah. So
no committal. We're both like, this was fun, dude. A fun hour playing with this. We're both, this is cool. This is a cool piece of technology. And shout out to the people who have open source repos on GitHub who are using it, because I'm the type of person who will regex search specific things on GitHub to find those types of repos. So there's some great resources out there, and I am. So I had fun trying Vite, and I think it's cool.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. I still need to give it a shot at some point, but I've heard good things about it.
Oh, you had a busy week, my friend. I saw.
Oh, it's been a busy month.
You're right about that.
We have been working real hard on the learnhotwire.com course. You have a really up-to-date. We talk about Hotwire Spark and all the new stuff that a lot of the older tutorials haven't covered. We've waited a long time to make this course, but I'm 47 videos in on Turbo Drive, Turbo Frames, Turbo Streams, Stimulus, and still haven't gotten into William Kennedy's part, which is the Hotwire native iOS and Android wrapper around these things. And he's going to explain the basics of UIKit and Swift and Android and Kotlin and whatever. So it's going to be a giant course at the end of the day, but that's kind of what I needed and trying to make it for myself. What is the complete package here that talks about a lot of the things that docs gloss over? So the integrations of, hey, you can use refreshes. And it's like, you can use refreshes, but now you have to reapproach how you do everything in your app, because that has implications on how do your stimulus controllers work? How does this and that work? Your broadcasting, your refreshes can be very useful for some things, but they can actually just cause pain in other places. So we actually end up building stuff and kind of undoing it because we see some of those issues. It could be done better this way and whatever. So it's kind of a good, different type of course for that reason. I'm trying to wrap up the very last page where we implemented infinite scroll. And there's a couple nuances to that. And it's not one that really makes for a good use case for the refreshes, because the infinite scroll is generating dynamic content and inserting in the page. And a refresh is going to take just page one and reload that HTML. So it does not really work well together for that reason. So it's fun to go through all that stuff and just show the little tips and tricks along the way or whatever. Even little things, like I haven't seen this for a long time, but if you want to do debugging and see visually your turbo frames, you can like style those custom elements. We even go into explaining how to make your own turbo streams from scratch. So we explain how web components work, how mutation observers work, intersection observers, and all that. So you get an idea of the implementation of it, which is probably also going to be another additional 10 videos or something, where I'm going to go through the source code for Turbo and walk through the actual real code, not just our from scratch prototype of how to do turbo streams in 5-10 minutes or whatever. So that'll be kind of cool too. So you can see like when you're debugging something weird and you're trying to figure out what the heck is going on, you can actually just go straight to the source code. So you'll have some understanding of how to debug it rather than just fruitlessly Googling and asking AI for help, which it's not documented well enough to find answers for complex things. I am very excited about it. I think we still have quite a bit of work to put together all the rest of it. And we're launching it on learnhotwire.com. So right now you can give us your email. We'll let you know when the course is ready, but I'm going to go build out that platform a little bit for our own purposes and stuff. I thought that would be fun. Might turn that into some content as well or whatever, but like our teeny tiny version of Podia.
Oh, well, hey now. Hey now. Dude, step off, bro. Don't be saying that. You activated me. Do you want to know why I'm excited? Because in 2019, I was working on Stimulus Reflex with Nate, right? We were WebSockets. And then I came to Podia and they were like, what we specifically want to do with you is have you work on replacing Stimulus Reflex with Turbo. So I was using Turbo in its first kind of version-y form a lot.
Yeah.
And that's the way I learned how to use Turbo. I learned how to do certain things around it in that version. And now I still do the same things I did when I learned it. I'm going to take this course because I'm really excited to learn all the ways that I could be doing things differently now. The times I would be reaching for a stream when I could actually just be using a frame or like this new morphing stuff. I've built Infinite Scroll in Podia. I built it. I had to tweak it multiple times to get it right. And I'm very interested to see like what is Infinite Scrolling like in 2025.
That was my experience too. Turbo Streams seemed like the obvious tool to reach for everything. So I just started using that everywhere. And then talking to Sean Doyle a long time ago, he was like, yeah, frames for everything. Don't use streams unless you absolutely have to. Oh, interesting. So then over time, I start switching my strategy for it. The streams stuff worked well because it was very similar to what I would write before with server rendered JavaScript. A long time ago, it would be a handful of jQuery things that would go and update the page and add event listeners and whatever else. And it was an easy thing to one-to-one convert to Turbo Stream commands. But then it was like, well, why do that when a Turbo Frame can have the server render the whole page again and grab that section and update that section? It's like, you don't have to fiddle with any of that. And then also your stimulus controllers just connect and you're good to go. And I was like, oh.
See, I'm still in the stream mindset. I still think in streams, and that's what I'm hoping to get out of this course is like stop thinking in streams because this could just be frames.
There's some interesting stuff where we'll go build it one way and then change it and build it a different way. And yeah, we don't use a lot of streams in the final app. And even frames now has become less necessary too because the refreshes for so many cases are just, look, this record updated. I don't care what page you're on, just refresh it. Well, that's really interesting because broadcasting updates from the model used to have to do the streams and then insert this to do over here and do it in different places, different ways, different partials oftentimes. And you'd end up with all these callbacks. And now it's just render a refresh and I don't care what page you're on. If it happens to show that to do, we'll reload it. And it's so fascinating.
Bro, I don't even know what you're talking about right now. So I'm like, wait, what?
It's cool. And this is stuff that came out of Hey Calendar or whatever.
Okay.
When Jorge was adding refreshes and whatnot to Turbo back in the day, a year ago. I don't even remember when refreshes came out. But there's even outlets now where it used to be that your stimulus controllers couldn't talk to each other and you could emit and dispatch an event and then listen to the event on the other controller and talk to each other that way. You don't have to do that anymore. There are outlets and you can have them where my to-do list can talk to all the to-dos inside of it and actually talk to the JavaScript rather than just the element. So it's pretty neat, the amount of new ways of doing things. it's one of those things that you still feel the rough edges because there are still things to be solved. There's no way for the server at the moment to decide, no official way for the server to decide how to break out of a turbo frame. So it doesn't have a way of doing that. If you want to like render a modal and use the turbo frame for handling errors for you, that's great. It feels awesome. And then when you want to close the modal at the end, when it's successful, you have to build a custom turbo stream event. Kind of annoying, but it's fine. It's not that you shouldn't do it. It's just kind of wish there was an official answer on how to handle that. And there are lots of pull requests that are kind of sitting outstanding, suggestions, ideas, whatever. And they're not being merged mostly, I think, because the Basecamp team hasn't run into those for their specific flows and their UIs. So they haven't been able to think through all the like gotchas with those different implementations, which is why some of those PRs sit for longer than we'd hope or whatever. But there's always somebody in the comments who are like, yeah, you know what? This works for me for now. And if there becomes an official solution later, we can swap it out and use that instead. So you kind of always have the tools to polish over some of those rough edges that maybe don't have an official solution yet, but it's interesting. It's been super fascinating because I think for me, in the similar vein as you're talking about, I know how to do things the old way, but how do I think about it in the new context? And that can be pretty tricky. Even just making the course, it was like, well, here's how I default to doing it, the way I'm comfortable with, the way I know. And then you get through it and you're like, actually, I could probably make that way simpler. It's fascinating.
I finally feel old, dude. I finally feel like I'm stuck in my ways about certain things.
Yeah, there you go.
God.
There are kids these days just learning
using their refreshes just and stuff.
Using refreshes, yeah.
I'll tell you what, I used my last brain cell and I banged it against every crevice of my like cranium to try to understand outlets, to get outlets to work. They made sense to me. I'm like, this is exactly what I want to do. The implementing it part, I was like, bro, am I dumb? Because we have a lot of nested stuff. Trying to figure out the way to write it was like, dude, I'm either dumb or I'm an idiot. I'm not sure which one, but it used every last bit of my intelligence to figure out how to make that work. And I only used it once because it was so like hard to make it work the first time.
When your app breaks it in production, you want to quickly understand and fix it, not sift through the logs for the next hour. That's where Honey Badger comes in. Honey Badger notifies you of errors, outages, and performance issues as they occur, and helps you respond instantly when your systems go down. When you need to dig deeper, Honeybadger's advanced query engine helps you reach into your logs and grab just the information you need. With error tracking, performance and uptime monitoring, log management, and support for over 10 languages, Honeybadger is the best tool to gain real-time insights into your application's health and performance. Best of all, it's free to get started and setup takes less than 5 minutes. Be sure to bookmark honeybadger.io. That's www.honeybadger.io. There's some stuff that we do in the course around that is funny because you're like, well, why wouldn't the docs just show it this way? It seems very obvious because the docs allude that you can do this, but then like the way we implement it just seems so much more straightforward.
I don't need the docs giving me hints, bro. One more person in my life trying to give hints, bro. Like, I can't pick up on these hints.
It's funny because there are so many little things like that. I literally trying to record one of the videos, sat down and for like 20 minutes, maybe not 20 minutes. It felt like 20 minutes. It was more like 5 minutes. I can't teach this course because I don't know how to get the stimulus controller to connect. Whatever I do, it just does not connect.
I feel
that.
And
then I went downstairs, took the dog out, came back up to the computer and was like, are you kidding me? I wrote an underscore in the HTML.
Every time,
and
dude.
It should have been a hyphen.
Every time, dude. Oh, I felt that in my soul, dude. So frustrating. You're like, this should be connected.
Yeah. And you're like questioning all of your life.
Yeah.
Until that point.
Like, and what else can I, what else am I good at that I could possibly do if I had to quit right here, right now? I could definitely get up on a roof and do that.
Yeah, there are definitely those moments. And even I, making the course, questioned my own sanity. And I was like, are you serious? And there's still some things we talk about in the course a little bit. The CSS classes interface is designed to work similar to targets. And it has like the ability to parse the value. Your class attribute in your HTML is a big old string, but it's white space separated. So then Stimulus tries to be helpful and give you an array back where it splits that for you. But ideally, it worked a little bit more like the values API, because there are so many times, and I understand DHH had a comment with the reasoning of, we don't want to couple the Stimulus controllers to CSS classes, which makes sense. We talk about that in the course.
100% makes sense. Yeah, 100% makes sense.
But there are so many times where it's, I'm building navigation and I want a hidden and an active class. I don't need to specify that in the HTML attributes. I just want to set the defaults. So we like build our own defaults and show how to do that. And I understand. And it makes sense from the perspective of the maintainers of Stimulus that maybe we don't do that, but sure would be nice if we could just have some method of adding defaults.
Someone needs to add a plugin. Surely this can be bolted on top. Because as a like someone who has maintained libraries, I understand I would not add that feature to my library. 100%. Right. That is dangerous. And that is a just recipe for issues from people who have other issues.
Yeah.
However, totally. That would be great for people like us who are like, we understand that this is coupled to thing that is kind of viewed as ephemeral, template text. So we understand that, but we're still down to do it because we don't give a crap. Bang, we start shooting our guns in the air.
The best example of this, I literally maintain the Tailwind CSS Stimulus Components library, which the purpose of that was to give some Stimulus JavaScript to your Tailwind UI components. And they're like tabs and modals and slide overs. Well, guess what we're going to be using? We're going to be using the CSS classes that Tailwind does, because it's literally made for that CSS framework. So having defaults for that CSS framework does make sense. Maybe not colors for the active tab and the inactive tab, but for hiding the panels, the hidden class, obviously. And the hidden is just a class that like everybody ends up implementing in every application. In that case, I sort of see it. I also understand discouraging that as well.
It's dangerous, dude, because like we said, in my mind, template text and CSS is ephemeral in my brain. That can just disappear, poof. Who knows?
You know what you reminded me of was the particular pain point actually is, it's funny because when you have a target, for example, or a CSS class, you can ask for the singular version of it and it will just give you like a null or undefined or the actual string. And they give you a has blank, has panel class or something, and it will give you true or false. But when you do the plural version, there isn't the active support magic methods like presence. So I can't just say this presence or the default value in my code. I have to actually check the length of the array and then return a different array if that's empty or whatever. You know what I really wish we had here was active support, and I wish JavaScript was better.
There's so many times that I get bitten by not checking the presence of a target, like controllers that I like try to share around. Oh, well, on this one specific page, this target may not be present, and it's like not wrapping that around. Like you get into so many like pitfalls. So now I just do it by default. Yeah,
that's it. That's a really interesting one, because some of the things that when you try to access them, like Stimulus will be like, you don't have that connected. What are you doing? And it'll raise an error or whatever. So then you have to go back and add some conditional logic around it and stuff. But you can also be smart and use the question mark period for calling a method.
Yeah, I could be smart, Chris, but sure, let's assume I can't though.
Thank goodness JavaScript has that these days. I use that all the time with Ruby.
Yeah.
And having that equivalent in JavaScript at least helps quite a bit. Because that seems to be like the biggest pain point of writing stimulus and Hotwire stuff for most Rails developers, you're typically translating your Ruby in your head to what the equivalent is in JavaScript. And your function calls and binding a function to the current stimulus controller, like there's nuance to that that you don't maybe aware of. And you have to think about async await and other stuff like that too. And it's quite a bit different of a language. You can't just override a getter, setter, or whatever, even. It's pretty tricky.
So I had this thought the other week and I asked my coworker, when you are thinking about a problem in code, do you think in your head in your native language and then have to translate that to English onto the code? And most of them were like, no, we like actually just code in English because we write code in English, blah, blah, blah. But I was, dude, think of how hard that would be if you have to think in like one language and then have to translate that to how you do it in English and then translate that to how you do it in Ruby and then translate that to how you do it in JavaScript. Brother, what is happening?
Yeah, that reminds me. Long time ago, I was helping somebody who was Italian and they had a Rails app and all the model names were in Italian. I kind of understand what I'm reading, but half of the code is in English because it's Ruby. But then the model names and the variable names are all in Italian. And I was like, this is the weirdest thing. I understand this means user and project and whatever, but it just felt like that extra translation layer in there. It was wild. You know, we don't ever come across that because we're just writing our own apps in English.
We're lucky that, yeah, we're privileged that it's written in English. Dude, gosh, that blew my mind the other day. And I had to ask every coworker who spoke another language, how do you think in your brain in your native language? And how does that then translate? It was interesting to hear how.
Yeah, because if your native language is not English, then I imagine a lot of people translate to English and then your code has to be then further translated.
That's why it was interesting to hear that, like, if we learn code in English, so we think about code in English.
I also think over time, it just kind of becomes innate in a sense where you're like, look, I'm in JavaScript mode. I know that I have to do parentheses and I can't use the, for the love of God, can JavaScript add question marks at the end of methods so we can stop doing that?
Yeah,
has
dude.
Blank.
Yeah,
nonsense,
dude.
Or has whatever nonsense. I hate that. And it's not like it would be that hard to add that to the parser for the language, but the
bro,
hard
just
part
update
would be
your parser,
browsers
bro.
To support it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Some of them don't even really support all the features of Flexbox, bro. You're really asking for a lot here.
It's wild because these days you can use the dialogue element. It's amazing. It's genuinely amazing that we don't have to use the stupid confirm or alerts and stuff. And that feels really awesome. We can do that, but we still don't have popovers.
Dude, no, like, there is a I was literally about to say this. There's a popover API.
There is, but it's still not. It's still not globally usable.
Not completely, dude, but it's still in progress. They're like, the spec is still changing. I was literally just reading an article on web.dev about this the other day.
It's almost there and it's almost there. Supported by most things. The dialogue is, and I was telling Adam Lathan, one of the reasons that I follow him and Tailwind so much is because I know if he adds it to the framework, then it's the whatever 95%+ usable or whatever. There's some of that stuff now, like the starting style CSS class selector thing. That is awesome because some of the trouble with doing animations or whatever can be the starting style of it needs to be set to something. So I don't have to like initially add JavaScript to add a beginning style and then remove it. And I think that can even improve a lot of our CSS animations for like the Tailwind CSS library now.
Bro, am I the only one who doesn't care about animations and thinks they're dumb and that we spend all this time and effort building these animation libraries is a waste of effort?
I feel that it might be the
there's so much math, dude. There's so many smart people working on this stuff, dude, and I am in awe of them because this is so complicated. But why do we have to do this?
It's so funny because the animations that are good are so subtle you don't even notice them, and the ones that are like painfully slow people are like, how do I disable that? Blah, blah, blah. They're frustrating for sure. If you're going to animate the dialogue, it better be 150 milliseconds or less, because I just want to interact with the dialogue and move on. I don't want to watch this pretty dialogue show up.
I feel like you need to be a mathematician and a UX expert to be able to implement these in a way that's not going to be annoying. These really smart people could be doing other things that are really smart and not wasting time on this freaking button pulsating for no reason.
It's one of those things that really does, when they get it right, adds a level of polish to it that you're just kind of like, my stuff will never feel this good. And when you get it right, it's just awesome. But it's so tricky. There's so much stuff to worry about. Before you can even get to that, that is the cream on the top. You got to first be working on making the tabs functional. Then you got to add your ARIA attributes. Then you got to add your keyboard shortcuts. And then you got to style it properly. And then maybe finally we could do a little bit of animation where we move the tab and slide it over to the next selection or something. Yeah. All the work to get to that point. And then I'm like, I'm ready to move on. I don't want to fiddle with this. I got more work to do.
I was gonna say, I would much rather spend my time making my code accessible than making it freaking... Dude, I know it's a joke and a meme, but I have been asked to add confetti to a button before. So let's be real.
Have you seen that? It's like a login form that there's a bear on top. And then when you select the password...
Oh, yeah.
It covers its eyes.
Dude, I've seen that on Dribbble. Years ago. I think that's so cool, dude. It's so cool to see like artists on Dribbble do these animations. And then when you see them in an app, this is like art. This is great art. When it gets in the middle of me logging in, I'm like, what the hell?
As long as it doesn't interrupt me, I'm fine with it. And like, that's a really good one. Adds personality. I don't have to worry about it.
And doesn't hinder me from my moving. Flow. It doesn't add time to me navigating from what I want to do. One page it's funny, like, what I want to do.
You're going to be using a password manager, so you're going to click a button. It's going to fill both of the fields out, and you'll never see the animation.
Well, in reality, most people are not using password managers. Let's be very clear.
It's true. That is sad.
But I have converted my family, so
yeah, you better have.
That's like your one job in life as a programmer with parents and like a family. You go home for Christmas. You're like, all right, everyone gets a one password subscription.
Yeah, let's all migrate over.
I'm going to add y'all to my family plan.
Yeah. And it used to be fixing printers, but thank God.
Dude, my mom showed me a book and she's like, if we ever die, all of the stuff's here. And I said, oh, hell no. Ain't no way, bro.
Now it's a post-it note to 1Password.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember one Christmas I came home. Every time I come home from college, could you fix this thing on our computer? And I'm like, I'm learning to code. I'm not learning to be IT support.
Yeah.
And I hate this. And I got pissed one time. That was shortly after I started learning Rails and then had bought my first MacBook. Literally just clicked add printer. It detected my printer and it works. And I didn't have to go like download drivers and install stuff and whatever. Windows is terrible back then. Mom, you have to get a MacBook. I'm not going to help you anymore. But if you get a Mac, you will be fine. And things just work. And you don't have to bother me constantly. And that did make a big difference back in the day. But man, things are better now on Windows. But geez, miss those days.
Can I tell you what happened to me today?
Yeah.
I was sitting in a chair at the dentist's office for the second time this week.
That's a bad sign right there. For once this year or once every 6 months, bad sign.
I told the lady that I was programmer and she said, oh, I've got a question. And she pointed at the TV on the wall and she said, sometimes the TV goes to sleep, even though we set it in the settings to not go to sleep. And I'm not really that type of programmer.
That's when you pulled out your ski mask and your laptop.
Let me get into the mainframe here. Kind of looked at her. I was like, I would have this same problem and frustration if we were swap places. So I can't really help you here. It was just funny to me. It was like, I've been asked for a lot of things. It was like, can you make the TV not go to sleep in the dentist office with top tier?
That's really good.
Ruby 3.4.2 came out. 3.4.1 came out recently. Because we just migrated to 3.4.1. And then later that day, I was like, 3.4.2 got released. So I assume there's some security stuff being...
If I remember right, it's just the routine. They're on a schedule now. So they just have a release date where they cut updates.
I feel like the last one just came out, though.
Yeah, which is why it's weird, because it used to be kind of at a random schedule. But as part of the release notes here, we intend to release the latest stable Ruby version every 2 months. So Ruby 3.4.3 will be released in April, 3.4.4 in June, 3.4.5 in August, and we'll have in October, and 3.4.7 in December. So that's really welcome. Just kind of a regular cadence. There will be additional security releases if anything comes up, but I thought that was awesome. And Raphael talked about doing the same thing for Rails, around Rails 8's release, which I don't remember. I think it was aiming for like once every 6 months, I think.
Okay, I was going to say, I don't think I need Rails to release every 2 months. That would just stress me.
Not every 2 months, no. And that's why
I'm okay with Ruby doing that. That's fine, because I don't need to upgrade Ruby every time. And also, there should be super small updates. So it's like, I'm cool with that. Yeah. I'm much more scared to update Rails than I am to update Ruby.
The Ruby updates are like very minimal. There might be a new JIT or something. And like we saw in 3.4. Not a lot, honestly.
No, but
Rails gets a lot more changes. And there are times where I wish that Rails had more regular releases, like once a quarter, where it's like you merged in some feature in Active Record.
That's only when a specific feature comes out, though. That's only if a specific thing is added.
Yeah, like a specific bug fix or something.
There could be multiple months where you're like, nothing's added that I need. I'm cool to chill where I'm at. It's only a specific thing that gets added sometimes where I'm like, oh, and I wish I had this.
If the risk was low that it was going to be a stable just to release it every quarter or even 2 months, then that'd be fine. But Rails aims for some bigger changes like solid queue and Hotwire is a major change and whatever else. So it doesn't make as much sense to do it that often, which is fine. But there are times, there's little things. I fixed a bug in September in JBuilder.
Who uses JBuilder, bro? No, I'm kidding.
Literally every Rails new by default does.
We have JBuilder and Podia some places too. I'm kidding.
Yeah. It's just one of those things where the core team in Rails is pretty small. They haven't really added many new maintainers. And
they're working for free.
I don't really know who. And they all have kind of their responsibilities that they're most familiar with and most comfortable merging Active Record features or whatever.
They're all special and they all have a specialty and we love them all.
Yes. But it can be hard. JBuilder isn't in the Rails repository, like the main repo. So PRs will be added to the microservices or something. Yeah. So it's one of those things where it's tricky for them to maintain all that. And then Hotwire is not even the Rails core team's responsibility. It's a handful of people at...
Shout out Marco.
And Marco. So it's a different team, which means it gets a different cadence on releases and stuff too. And definitely a little tricky. There almost needs to be like twice as many people as maintainers on stuff at least.
Okay, but hold on. But
it's so hard.
You've been writing software long enough to know that you add twice as many cooks to the kitchen and you get twice as many messes.
Yeah, that's why it's so hard. The little bug fixes and other stuff. Like you don't need all those maintainers doing major things, but somebody just keeping an eye on JBuilder and sort of neglected stuff that tends to get neglected could be helpful to have somebody doing that where they're not making any, we're going to revamp JBuilder and rewrite it from scratch. It's tricky, but
here's the last question we have before we go. Are we going to race Lamborghinis in Vegas?
Ooh.
Because we could become race car drivers.
Yeah.
I got a certificate on my fridge, bro. It's the only thing I'm proud of.
Oh, man. I might take you up on that. We've done a few PDX days. We have a local track, like a NASCAR oval with a road course inside of it. which is a little sketchy. The first time I went out, you can go to these PDX days and you get paired with like a pro driver and headset, and they teach you like how to drive fast. That first day that I went out, it was after they had oiled the track for IndyCar. And during the beginning, they're like, we haven't had an accident in years or whatever. Nah,
that's not what I want to hear, dude. That's not what I want to hear.
Four cars went into the wall that day.
Dude, I mean, we've had four plane crashes or whatever the past few weeks.
Oh my God.
I used to tell everyone, I'm not scared to fly. Dude, all of those plane crashes have been in places I've flown into recently.
I know. That's that, also
Scottsdale. Freaking yeah. Toronto, Philly. I was just there, bro.
I know.
DC, I was just in DC. I was just at Reagan, dude. It was like, bro.
That's what's freaking me out about it, too. I've been to all those places very recently. Like, yeah. So
I'm still a numbers person, so I'm still going to roll the dice and not care. But because statistically,
you're so far away from those places, driving is not really doable.
No, because I swore on my grave and the grave of my ancestors, I would never drive through West Texas again. So like, it adds so much more time if I can't do that.
Even driving is like, oh, you get a flat tire, you get a rock, chips your windshield, whatever. Like, it's got maybe more issues.
I've always driven to Vegas, but I was kind of thinking about flying this year. It's 4.5 hours, and it's not a bad drive because you can...
That's close.
...kind of jet it, and I was just going to get a radar detector because one time a cop almost got me, but shout out to the other drivers on the road because we got the blinks, and we were cool.
Nice. Yeah.
But
you can join me and we'll do the cannonball run someday.
Dude, I would love to do that. I'm the type of person that I will totally get in the car with someone who's going to drive like that.
Man, if anybody doesn't know about the cannonball run, you should look that up. People are still
listening to this podcast then.
Still doing that.
Are they still? There's no way they're going to be the COVID time.
Yeah, that's pretty much until the next COVID. I forget what the record is.
Oh, hell no. Don't be saying that.
We got to be willing to hire friends to fly airplanes ahead to look for cops.
Totally down.
That's the minimum bar to do this these days.
My backup plan, if I didn't make it as a programmer, was to fly Apache helicopters in the military. So
there you go.
Apparently, I have the time for it.
October 21st, the overall record is 25 hours, 39 minutes with an average speed.
That's insane, dude.
An average speed of 112 miles per hour.
It's not surprising when you start driving. Like, I've driven across this country, literally up and down the coasts and left to right at this point. And
yeah,
there are totally places in the country where you can go over 120 miles an hour and just be chilling.
Yeah. Well, watching some of the interviews with those guys, they are going 160 as often as possible, because the worst part about that average being 112 is your fuel stops, because you got to stop at zero for so long and fuel up, and you're not fueling up your regular tank because you have to make the entire trunk of your car a fuel tank as well. Yeah. So you've got a lot of gas to pump. I remember somebody was like, yeah, we pull up in the middle of two sets of
jump out
and then fuel them both up at the same time. And I was like,
if I saw someone doing that, I'd be like, how can I help? Let me clean the windshield.
Yeah, like, what are you doing, kid? And how do I help? Yeah.
Here's some snacks, bro. You need them.
Yeah. And a pee bottle.
Yeah, dude. Got to. Last thing before we hang up, have you been watching Severance? If not, I need you to
know
that immediately.
No, I haven't. My aunt was watching it the other day and I was like, need to do that, because season two's out or whatever.
Season two is ongoing right now, and season two has been phenomenal.
I watched two episodes of it on Apple TV trial or something back when it came out, but
it surpassed Ted Lasso as the most watched Apple TV series already. And it hasn't even finished season two. Season two's been great.
I keep hearing it being mentioned and stuff, so I'll have to give it a watch.
Yeah, I feel like Brooke would like it.
Oh, yeah.
That seems like
I
that.
I think she's watched some of that.
I feel like she's on it more than you would. Come on, bro. I need you to get on this.
I don't watch TV at all anymore. I watch Bluey, Peppa Pig,
that
Mickey
makes
Mouse,
sense.
Clubhouse.
That makes sense. Yeah, that tracks. That tracks.
When we get into the SpongeBob phase,
there we go.
Be even better. Literally this morning, working at my computer, I hit play on Spotify and 15 minutes later realized I'm still listening to Mickey Mouse Clubhouse.
I can't wait until Jackson learns about South Park from Uncle Andrew.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when he starts quoting that at school and stuff, we start getting reports.
Right. Yeah, yeah. End the episode now before I quote it, and then we get booted off the air.
Love it. All right, dude. I will catch you next week.
I hope so.
Peace.
Peace.